Hello and welcome to this episode of the Beyond podcast. I'm your host, Robert Crichton, and today we have a full cast audio adaptation of The Conceited Peddler by Thomas Randolph, a 17th century stand-up show for students. For a detailed breakdown of the text, to understand in detail the action of the play, do go to our spoilers episode, where I attempt to break down the humour and where there is a complete uncut plain text recording. This version has been trimmed at an attempt for clarity, and it is a tricksy one, so the spoilers episode might be useful. Beyond presents The Conceited Peddler by Thomas Randolph, with Alex Scott Fairley as the peddler.
Who do we have next? Next!
Next up, I think we have a Mr. Randolph coming in.
Mr. Randolph, is it?
Now, Mr. Randolph, remember, there's a lot of competition for the Cambridge Footlights, so we're delighted you've come in with all the stuff.
It's a lot of props, Mr. Randolph.
But we do have a lot of people to see, so if we could keep it tight, that'd be lovely.
Right, Mr. Randolph, in your own time.
Generous gentlemen, such is my affection to Phoebus and the 99 Muses that for the benefit of this royal university, I have stroddled over 3 of the terrestrial globes with my geometrical rambling. Videlicet, the Asia of the dolphin, the Africa of the rose, the America of the mitre, besides the terra incognita of many an alehouse. And all for your sakes, whom I know to be the divine brats of Helicon, the lawful begotten bastards of the thrice 3 sisters, the learned silly foals to Monsieur Pegasus, arch hackney to the students of Parnassus. Therefore I charge you, by the 7 deadly sciences, which you more study than the 3 and 4 liberal sins, that your ha-ha-hees may be recompense of my ridiculous endeavours. I have been long in travel. But if your laughter give my embryon jests but safe deliverance, I dare maintain it in the throat of Europe. Geronimo rising from his naked bed was not so good a midwife. But I see you have a great desire to know what profession I am of. Now first, therefore, hear what I am not.
I am not a lawyer. For I hope you see no buckram honesty about me.
And I swear by these sweet lips, my breath stinks not of any state actions.
I am no soldier,
although my heels be better than my hands. By the whips of Mars and Bellona, I could never endure the smell of saltpetre since the last gunpowder treason. The voice of a mandrake to me is sweeter music than those maxims of wars, those terrible cannons. I am no townsman, unless there be rutting in Cambridge. For you see my head without horns. I am no alderman, for I speak true English. I am no justice of the peace, for I swear by the honesty of Amitimus, the venerable bench never kissed my worshipful buttocks. I am no lord, and yet methinks I should, for I have no lands. I am no knight, and yet I have as empty pockets as the proudest of them all. I am no Inns of Court gentleman, for I have not been stewed throughly at the Temple, though I have been half coddled at Cambridge. Now do you expect that I should say I am a scholar? But I thank my stars, I have more wit than so. Why, I am not mad yet. I hope my better genius will shield me from a threadbare black cloak. It looks like a piece of Beelzebub's livery. A scholar? What? I do not mean my brains should drop through my nose. No. If I was what I wish I could but hope to be, but I am a noble, generous, understanding, royal, magnificent, religious, heroical, and thrice illustrious peddler. But what is a peddler?
Why, what's that to you?
Yet, for the satisfaction of him whom I most respect, my right honourable self, I will define him. A peddler is an individuum vagum, or the primum mobile of tradesmen, that, like another Atlas, carries his heavenly shop on shoulders. Ugh. I am a peddler, and I sell my ware this brave St. Bartholo or Sturbridge Fair. I'll sell all for laughter. That's all my gains. Such chapmen should be laughed at for their pains. Come buy my wits, which I have hither brought, for wit is never good till it be bought. Oh, let me not bear all back. Buy some the while. If laughter be too dear, take it for a smile. My trade is jesting now. My shop and I am all at your command for lawful English laughter paid at hand. Half have not paid me yet. First, there is one owes me a quart for his declamation. Nor dare I cross him who does owe as yet 3 ells of jests to line Priorum's wit. But here's a courtier has so long a bill, 'twill fright him to behold it, yet I will relate the sums. Item, he owes me first for an imprimis, but what grieves me worst, a dainty epigram on his spaniel's tail cost me an hour, besides 5 pots of ale. Item,
an anagram on his mistress's name.
Item, the speech wherewith he courts his dame, and an old blubbered scowling elegy upon his master's dog's sad exequy. Nor can I yet the time directly gather when I was paid for an epitaph on his father. Besides, he never yet gave me content for the new coining of his last compliment. Should I speak all? Be it spoken to his praise, the total sum is what he thinks or says. I will not let you run so much of the score. Poor Duck Lane brains, trust me, I'll trust no more. Well, shall's jest for naught? Have you all conscience lost? Or do you think our sack did nothing cost? Well, then it must be done as I have said. I needs must be with present laughter paid. I am a freeman, for by this sweet rhyme, the fellows know I have secured the time. Yet if you please to grace my poor adventures, I'm bound to you in more than 10 indentures. But a pox on Skelton's fury. I'll open my shop in honester prose. And first, gentlemen, I'll show you 6 of incomparable points. I would give you the definition of points, but that I think you have them at your fingers' ends. Yet for your better understanding, a point is no body, a common term, an extreme friend of a good man's longitude, whose centre and circumference join in one diametrical opposition to your equilateral doublets or equicrural breeches. But to speak to the point, though not to the purpose of your actual all-purpose fastenings, the first point is a point of honesty, but is almost worn out, and has never been in request since trunk hose and codpiece breeches went out of fashion. It's made of simplicity ribbon and tagged with plain dealing. If there be any knaves among you, as I hope you are not all fools, faith, buy this point of honesty. And the best use you can put it to is to tie the band of affection. Yeah, but I fear this point will find no chapman. Some of you had rather sell than with Demosthenes buy honesty at so dear a rate. Oh, I could wish that the breeches of bowsers, stewards, taxers, receivers, and auditors were trussed with these honesty points, but some will not be tied to it. Oh, but whist, Tom, it is dangerous untrussing the time. The next is a point of knavery, but I have enough of them already. Yet because I am loath to carry mine any longer about me, who gives me most shall take it, and the devil give him good on it. This point is cut out of villainous sheepskin parchment in a scrivener's shop, tagged with the gold of a ring which the pillory robbed him of when it borrowed his ears. Amongst all my points, a point of ignorance is the very alderman of the dozen. The next is a point of good manners that has been long lost amongst a crowd of clowns because it was only in fashion on this side Trent. Next point is a point of false doctrine, snatched from the codpiece of a long-winded Puritan. The breath of Arminius will rot in him. Tag him with a piece of Apocrypha, and he breaks in sunder. Truss him to the surplice, and his breeches will presently fall down with the thought of the whore of Babylon. He hates unity and church discipline so far that you cannot tie a true love's knot on him. Cut off his tags, and he will make excellent strings for a Geneva Bible. 'Tis made of a dangerous, stubborn leather, tagged at one end with self-conceit, at the other with willful opinion. Well, if you like my point, why do you not buy? If you would have a more full point, I can furnish you with a period. I have a parenthesis, but that may be left out. But if my points have here at all offended, I'll tell you a way how all may be amended. Speak to the point, and that shall answer, friend. All is not worth a point, and there's an end. The next is a looking glass. But I'll put it up again, for I dare not be so bold as to show some of you your own faces. Yet I will, because it hath strange operations. Viz., if a cracked chambermaid dress herself by this looking glass, she shall dream the next night of kissing her lord, or making her mistress a she-cuckold, and she'll marry a chaplain, the next living that falls. If a stale-caught lady look on this reflection, she may see her old face through her new complexion. An usurer cannot see his conscience in it. If a townsman peep into it, his horns, his Actian's furniture is no longer invisible. Corrupt takers of bribes may read the price of their consciences in it. Some fellows cannot see the face of a scholar in it. If a blind man see his face in it, he shall recover his eyesight. If any this looking glass disgrace, it is because he dares not see his face. Then what I am, I will not see faith say. 'Twas the whore's argument when she threw it away. But now, considering what a philosophical vacuum there is in most of our Cambridge noddles, I have here to sell a sovereign box of cerebrum, a box of brains, which by Lullius's alchemy was extracted from the quintessence of Aristotle's pericranium, sod in the syncopate of Demosthenes, the fire being blown with the long-winded blast of a Ciceronian sentence, the whole confection boiled from a pottle to a pint in the pipkin of Seneca. We owe the first invention of it to Sir John Mandeville, the perfection of it to Tom of Odcombe, who fetched it from the grey-headed Alps in the Hobson's wagon of experience. But for this box of brains, you had not laughed tonight. These brains have very admirable virtues and very strange operations. 4 drops of it in the ear of a lawyer will make him write true Latin. 3 grains will fill the capital of an university gander. The terrestrial head of a high constable will be contented with 1/2 dram. 3 scruples and a half will fill the brain pan of a Bambury brother. Come buy my brains, you ignorant gulls, and furnish here your empty skulls. Pay your laughter as it's fit to the learned peddler of wit. Quickly come and quickly buy, or I'll shut my shop and fools you'll die. If your coxcombs you would quaddle, here buy brains to fill your noddle. Who buys my brains learns quickly here to make a problem in a year, shall understand the predicable and the predicamental rabble. Who buys them not shall die a fool, an exoteric in the school. Who has not these shall ever pass for a great acromatical ass. Buy then this box of brains. Who buys not it shall never surfeit on too much wit. But leaving my brains, I come to a more profitable commodity. For considering how dull half the wits of the university be, I thought it not the worst traffic to sell whetstones. This whetstone will set such an edge upon your inventions that it will make your rusty iron brains purer metal than your brazen faces. Whet but the knife of your capacities on this whetstone, and you may presume to dine at the Muses Ordinary, or sup at the Oracle of Apollo. If this be not true, I swear by the doxy's petticoats that I'll never hereafter presume of a better vocation than to live and die the miserable factor of coney skins. I have also gloves of several qualities. The first is a pair of gloves made for a lawyer, made of an entire lodestone that has the virtue to draw gold unto it. They were perfumed with the conscience of an usurer, and will keep scent till wrangling have left Westminster Hall. They are seamed with indenture by the needlework of mortgage and fringed with a novarent university. I would show you more, but it is against the statute, because a latitat has been served lately upon them. My next commodities are several nightcaps. The first is lined with fox fur, which I hope to sell to some of the sophisters. It hath an admirable faculty for curing the crapula, above the virtue of ivy or bitter almonds. Nay, the pottage pot's not comparable unto it. Well, I could fit all heads with nightcaps, except your grave, overwise, metaphysical heads. Marry, they are so transcendent that they will not be comprehended within the predicant of a nightcap. I have also several ruffs. First, a ruff of pure Holland for a Dutch drunkard, a cuff of cobweb lawn for the university statutes. I have a ruff for the college too, but by this badge of our college, my reverend lambskins, our backbiters say our college ruffs are quite out of stock. I have no more ruffs but one, and that is a ruff of strong hemp. You may have them who will, at the Royal Exchange of Tyburn. But you will not bestow your money on such trifles. Why? I have greater wares. Will you buy any parsonages, vicarages, deaneries, or prebendaries? The price of one is his lordship's crack chambermaid. The other is the reserving of his worship's tithes. Or you may buy the knight's horse, £300 too dear, who, to make you amends in the bargain, will draw you on fairly to a vicarage. But I see you are not minded to meddle with any my honest Levitical farmers. But now, expect treasures of the world, the treasures of the earth, digged from the mines of my paunch. Wipe your eyes, that no envious clouds of musty humours may bar your sight of the happiness of so rare an object. View this wench of alabaster. Come from thy palace, beauteous queen of Greece. Sweet Helen of the world, rise like the morn, clad in the smock of night, that all the stars may lose their eyes and then grow blind. Run weeping to the man in the moon, to borrow his dog, to lead the spheres a-begging. Rare empress of our souls, whose charcoal flames burn the poor colt's foot of amazed hearts. View this dumb audience thy beauty spies, and then, amazed with grief, laugh out thine eyes. Here's now a rare beauty. Oh, how all your fingers itch. Who should be the first chapman? This'll be a dainty friend in a corner. And were't not better to embrace this pretty shambles of beauty, this errant poultry of perfection, than to tumble your soapy laundresses? Is this like your draggle-tailed bedmakers? When a man shall lie with sea-coal ashes and commit adultery with the dust of his chamber? Methinks this peerless paragon of complexion should be better countenanced. She would set a sharp edge on your appetites than all the threepenny cutlers in Cambridge. I am a man, as you are, and this naughty flesh and blood will never leave tempting. Yet I protest, by the sweet soul of this incomparable she, I never had any acquaintance with the pretty libraries of flesh, but only this. This is the subject of my muse. This I adorn with costly epigrams, and such curious encomiums as may deserve immortality in the chamber pots of Helicon. And thus my furor poeticus doth accost her. Fair madam, thee whose everything deserves the close stool of a king, whose head is fair as any bone, white and smooth as pumice stone, whose natural baldness scorns to wear the needless excrements of hair, whose forehead streaks our heart's commands like Dover cliffs or Goodwin sands, while from those dainty glowworm eyes Cupid shoots plum pudding pies, while from the arches of thy nose a cream pot of white nectar flows. Fair, dainty lips, so smooth, so sleek, and truly alabaster cheek, pure saffron teeth, happy the meat that such pretty millstones eat. Oh, let me hear some silent song tuned by the dew's trump of thy tongue. Oh, how that chin becomes thee well, where never hairy beard shall dwell. Thy coral neck doth statelier bow than Io's when she turned a cow. Oh, let me, or I shall ne'er rest, suck the black bottles of thy breast, or lay my head and rest me still on that dainty Hogmagog hill. Oh, curious and unfathomed waist, as slender as the stateliest mast. Thy fingers too breed my delight, each wart a natural Margarite. Oh, pity then my dismal moan, able to melt thy heart of stone. Thou know'st how I lament and howl, weep, snort, condole, look sad and scowl. Each night so great my passions be, I cannot wake for thought of thee. Thy gown can tell how much I loved, thy petticoat to pity moved. Then let thy peddler mercy find to kiss thee once, though it be behind. Sweet kiss, sweet lips, delicious scents, how sweet as Zephyrus blows from thence. Blessed petticoat, more blessed her smock, that daily busseth her buttock. For now the proverb true I find, that the best part is still behind. Sweet dainty soul, deign but to give the poor peddler this hanging sleeve, and in thine honour, by this kiss, I'll daily wear my pack in this, and quickly so bear thee more fame than Quixote the knight-errant's dame. So farewell, sweet, deign but to touch, and once again re-bless my pouch. Is it not pity such ware should not be bought? Well, I perceive the fault is in the emptiness of your learned pockets. Well, I'll to the court and see what I can sell there, and then carry the relics to Rome. Some friend must now perforce make haste and bid my boy to saddle me my wooden horse, for I mean to conquer Troy.
Thank you, Mr. Randolph. Thank you. Oh, that was very impressive. We'll be in touch.
Yes, thank you. Yes, just down the corridor. That's lovely. Send the next one in for us.
Be
thank
sure
you.
To get all your props.
Thank you very much. Yes, no, just send the next one in, please.
Thank you.
Just send the,
yes.
the next one
in. Next!
In The Conceited Peddler by Thomas Randolph, the peddler was played by Alex Scott Fairley, with the voices of Liza Graham and Robert Crichton as the audition panel. And the episode was recorded, mixed, and hosted by Robert Crichton for the Beyond podcast. As well as this episode on the podcast, there is a spoilers episode to discuss this play, and there is also an exploring session on the YouTube channel. Links are in the show description. If you've enjoyed this podcast, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Beyond Shakes. Visit our website at beyondshakespeare.org or support our work by becoming a patron at patreon.com/beyondshakespeare. Our patrons support all the work we do and get a vote to decide the plays we work on next. Not only that, there are a host of exclusive episodes and early access content every single week. So do join us, support us, be part of the conversation. Till then, I've been your host, Robert Crichton. Goodbye.